Accession number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 12. Now, what was the political situation? I mean, there was a reason you were there in Cyprus at this time, I presume, and it was a fairly complex political situation between the Greeks.
Yes, it was. They wanted Enesis. The Greeks wanted union with Greece, and they had one or two gentlemen who didn't let them forget this, such as Archbishop Makarios, I think probably Archbishop in brackets, who wanted union with Greece, and he had whether he actually originated it, I don't know, but I bet there was a sort of military arm that was run by a gentleman called General Grivas, and their total sort of function was to get union with Greece and get the British thrown out. So they set up a terrorist organization, which the British forces there were sent to get rid of. And of course, like all situations like that, very few terrorists can tie down an enormous amount of troops.
And this terrorist organization, that's AOKA?
AOKA, yes, sorry, yes. That was called AOKA. And they were operating in small cells, they just did as much as they could to disrupt the life of the island. Ruled through fear, and made as much of a nuisance to the British as they could. I suppose in some ways we were back into a sort of Milan type operations. I mean, we had. By this time, we were commanded by...
Hang on, I'll just come back. Now, there's another aspect of the situation, because there are, of course, the Turkish Cypriots as well.
Well,
now, were you aware of what was going on there? I mean, or were they just very much seen as being placid and not involved?
Well, I think at the time when I arrived, of course, the town had been there for quite some time already, the Turkish were not much of a problem, and I think certainly, you know, places like Kyrenia, which was a total Turkish town and now part of the Turkish bit of Cyprus, was safe. I seem to remember that we didn't. I don't think we even carried. Not sure we even carried weapons. I think. Weapons. If we went to Kyrenia, we probably handed them in, or we could hand them in to somebody, and we walked around without weapons. But no, at that stage, there wasn't, I don't think, really a problem with the Turks. There was later on, because I hadn't been with the battalion very long when I was made brigade intelligence officer.
Hang on, sure. I'm sorry. Let's get back to where you were when I interrupted. Then. Yeah. You were saying about the new commanding officer. Sorry.
The commanding was Colonel Bertie Bevan. Bevan, B-E-V-A-N, and he was CO then.
Now, what was he like?
Well, he is deceased, so. I would say he was not one of the best commanders that I soldiered under.
Now, in what way? What were the problems that you felt with his method of commanding a battalion?
Well, I'm I don't think I'm really prepared to say, to be quite honest. I think that it might be unfair.
That is. I understand why. How did you get on with him, or was it not very well?
I got on with it all right. I mean, I got on with him all right. I didn't see a great deal of him. When I got out there, I was posted to C Company, and my company commander was Pat Thursby, T-H-U-R-S-B-Y, who I think had been para, I think, in the, at one stage. Very nice man. I got on with him very well, and I must have been his company second in command, because I wouldn't have been given a platoon at that stage, because I was now a captain.
Now, what was Pat Thursby like as a company commander? Sort of, in a way, we're looking at what you look for in a good company commander. You said he was pretty good.
Well, he was incisive. He got on very well with all his soldiers. He was much respected. He clearly knew exactly, you know, what he was doing, and you just felt that if he said you were to do something, there was an extremely good reason for doing it. He was just a much respected soldier.
And what about you? What was your role as second in command, other than the obvious?
Well, my role as second in command was really sort of on the administrative side. If they were out on operations, it would be to get to make sure they had all the right clothing, that they had got their ammunition, that the food got up. All the sort of administrative side of the company, so that the company commander could get on and do the operational command work.
So playing to your strengths as an ex-adjutant, then.
Yes. It was all on that side, on that. But no. I wasn't there. I was only with the battalion a very short time.
Now, did anything happen in that short time?
Any
operations?
In mine. I can remember the company going up to a place operationally called Davlos, D-H-A-V-L-O-S, and which was up in what they call the Panhandle, which is the sort of right-hand side of Cyprus.
And what were you doing there?
I presume we were keeping a presence, so that they could see the villagers could see that there were British troops around, and I presume we had a company base there. We must have all had sort of company operating areas. And so we would have been in Davlos, and then if there'd been a problem in any of the villages in the surrounding areas, we would have turned out to go and deal with it. Each company would have had if we were in a company base, would have had a standby platoon, and they would practically be all dressed up in their operational kit and ready to go at a second's notice, and then the rest of the company would cost, I don't know, be at 2 hours notice and whatever it is, but you would have had one platoon who could have got straight on the back of the trucks and been sent out to where there was a problem. I think that probably was the only actually operational place.
Anything happen? Or was it
no,
quiet?
No, I think it was quiet. I can't remember anything particular happening.
Were troops being attacked much at this time? I mean, there was the threat, but were there, you know...
Well, there was ambushing, but a lot of the, like any of these situations, an enormous amount of just routine work, routine patrolling, keeping a presence, and nothing very much happening. And then, if you were lucky, you know, some information would come in that there were some AOKA terrorists in a certain village, and then you might lay on, have to suddenly lay on a cordon and search operation, which is normally going in before first light, surrounding the village with your troops, and then sending in a number to search the village, and a house, you do a sort of house-to-house search. A lot of these AOKA terrorists were extremely good at making their hideaways. They'd have places like sort of underneath, on top of a fire, for example. There would be a sort of fire, and the stone on which the fire, etc., etc. But actually, it was hiding atop. For them to where they used to go down and hide if there was a problem. They were quite good at quite clever at that. But
you weren't doing much of this, you know.
No, I think we all, I'm sure we did do one or two coordinate searches and things.
While you were at Davos.
While we were up there.
Where were you living at Davos? I mean, were you just on the intent, or do you know?
That's a very good question. I don't know. Perhaps I don't know whether we took tents. Perhaps we took tents. No. I just can't remember.
Now, but you weren't with them long, were you?
No, I wasn't with them very long. When I, well, I suppose the battalion was asked to supply a brigade intelligence officer for the Nicosia Brigade, of which we were part.
Did it have a number, the brigade, or was it just called
50? Yeah, it was 50 brigade. It was lucky for me because brigade headquarters was also in the same tented camp that the battalion was. So I didn't actually have to, I had a staff job in brigade headquarters, but I actually continued to live in the battalion lines. Which
and this is still 57?
This was 50, yes, this would have been 57, yeah. Some latter end of 57, I suppose.
Now, what was the composition of, you'd be in headquarters, you know, of 50 Brigade. What was the composition of the headquarters?
Well, the headquarters, was Brigadier Bunbury, and then the usual start of the brigade major, who his name I think was Elliot, and a DAQMG who looked after the sort of more the administrative side, who was Mickey Boyd and the Irish Guards, who sadly and later died in Ireland, went out shooting. I think he got lost on or got taken on the marshes somewhere and was drowned. Then there would have been one or two other junior staff officers like me and a small group to do the typing and all the rest of it. It wasn't a very large brigade headquarters.
Now, what was your role as intelligence officer? We've discussed this briefly about your role when you were, you know, briefly at Triage. What was your role then?
Well, 50 Brigade consisted of the Suffolks, the Lancashire Fusiliers, and 43 Light ACAC, and also the I think in those days called the Blues and Royals. One's job, I suppose, really, was trying to provide as much information as one could to the various intelligence officers of those units in order that they could get on and do their job. I was actually based in the Nicosia Police Headquarters, which is where my sort of office was, and I had one person to assist me. I had a corporal of horse from the Blues and Royals who assisted me.
Now, why the police headquarters? What exactly were you doing in there?
Everything sort of worked from the police headquarters. I mean, obviously, an enormous amount of information flowed in to the police, because the police were the basic organisation in Cyprus. There were, police stations in most large villages and that sort of thing. So the information tended to come in on the police net rather than the military net. And so really I was sitting sort of next door to the officer who ran the Nicosia police station, and together any information that came in, we would quickly get out to the units concerned. Other than tense times, which we'll come on to, I didn't live there all. I spend 24 hours a day there. We were given what we call cue cars, which were ordinary civilian cars, so that any AOKA gentleman didn't realise that you were British military running around, because a lot of the time one was just on one's own. You didn't have anybody with you. And I seem to remember we changed our cars about every 3 weeks, something like that, so that they didn't get known as a military car. So I would go down in the morning if I hadn't been called out during the night. Get myself fully briefed, and then pass on what information I could to the IOs. I think the IOs used to come in and see me possibly every day. I'm not sure we didn't have a briefing, every day. And I just and if I couldn't get hold of them, then I would go out to them. One just did as much as one possibly could to provide the units with as much information as one could.
Did you enjoy the work?
Yes. Yes. It was very interesting. It very much hotted up once we had the intercommunal trouble. Because in 58, we started to get an awful lot of intercommunal, the Turks versus the Greeks, and this became a big problem, especially in Nicosia, where Nicosia virtually became divided by, I think it was called the Mason-Dixon line, between the sort of Greek element and the Turk element, and no holds barred. And this all started on a weekend, because I was actually down in Decalia, which is in southern Cyprus, staying with a brother officer. And having had a very good dinner and everything, I was suddenly summoned back to Nicosia about 11 o'clock in the evening. And I had no idea what it was, whether it was Aoka had done something terrible or what. So I got into my little Q car, which I think in them was a Morris 1000, and drove back to Nicosia. I had no idea what was going to confront me on the way, whether I would suddenly find the road had been barred off and I was about to be ambushed or whatever it is. So it was quite a nervous time. But then when I got up over the hills and looked down onto Nicosia, it looked as if Nicosia was on fire. The whole place was ablaze. And I can't remember at the time whether I realised what it was, because I think the intercommunal thing would, without doubt, have probably been brewing, but I think it suddenly burst on Nicosia. And then when I eventually got through, I managed to get through to the police station, and then all everyone told me what was going on. We had a big problem on our hands, and that went on for a long period of time.
Now, how bad were the attacks each community was making on the other? I mean, what sort of attacks are we talking about?
Well, I think at the time, I mean, I think there was a lot of nastiness when, Greeks would attack Turkish families, or Turks would attack Greek families.
Now, attack or kill?
Well, kill, yes. Oh, yes, there was. I mean, there was one occasion, the Ganelli incident, which became very nasty indeed. And this happened because a number of Turks had been picked up for being a nuisance and were being brought into Nicosia police station when we actually had virtually a sort of riot going on outside the police station. And so orders were given to take these Turks way out of Nicosia and drop them off and make them walk home, which was done. But unfortunately, on walking home, they had to go through one or two Greek villages, and as they did so, there were one or two nasty massacres, and this became, there was a big inquiry, in fact, about it afterwards.
It was called the what? The Ganelli?
Ganelli, and oh God, Ganelli, something like that. I mean, this was a very good example of things being done in the heat of the moment, because obviously the first thing asked is, well, why the hell were they let off where they were let off and had to? And I think the answer to that is that one wasn't even thinking of that when the order was made. A big worry was that we didn't want them being brought into Nicosia police station, because there was already a riot, an intercommunal riot, going on. So we didn't want even more people being brought in. So the immediate reaction was just get the hell out of it, get them out of it, tell them to walk back to their villages. And I don't think anybody who, I mean, I gave the order to tell them not to get the hell out of it, and just and tell them get to walk home. and I certainly hadn't looked at that stage, because there was too many other things going on. I hadn't looked at my map to see if there were. Well, actually, I don't think I even knew where. I just said, let them out and walk home. And I'm sure the chap, I think it was Blues and Royals, who let them go. I'm sure he never even thought there might, what there was in between, because it's dead easy afterwards to say, why weren't these things thought of? But if you're actually in the middle of a difficult intercommunal riot right in the middle of Nicosia, that's the least of your problems. And like exactly the same as going on in Iraq now, there are too many know-alls who jump on the bandwagon and have no idea what it's like when they are actually in a situation like that. So that
did the inquiry blame anyone? Or
I don't think. I think like a lot of inquiries, it probably didn't come out with anything. It's just left the fog of war, if you like. But there was. It was. I mean, that was the beginnings of the split. That we have to this day of the Turk side, because actually the Suffolk Battalion, by this time, even if you had a few a day off, you couldn't really go into Nicosia, because it wasn't safe on off-duty limits. So we actually took a house in Kyrenia, which we had as B mess. And so if we had a couple of days off, you could go up to the relative safety of Kyrenia, where you could walk around and relax and bathe. And
that's in the Turkish Cypriot?
That was in the Cypriot. That's very much the Turkish, Turkish side. But of course, as well as all the intercommunal, we still had the AOKA, the main aim of dealing with AOKA as well. So this was just a sort of an added problem.
Had they actually formed this? You said the Mason-Dixon line. Is this what is now the Green Line?
Well, I think it must be what's now the Green Line.
I think
yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Was that actually formed while you were there then?
Yes.
What's the background to the formation of it?
It must have been after that night when I was dragged back. We must have turned everything out. There must have been a big turnout of troops. And they were obviously able to split up the Turkish and the Greek sides, and I think, although I can't really remember, but in Nicosia itself there must have already been a Turkish element and a Greek element, and it was a question of splitting up the two elements and literally putting a barbed wire to start with. I think it was a sort of man barbed wire fence between the two two lots. I think it was as basic.
Then patrolled by the British, was it, or by the United Nations?
No. There was no United Nations then. No.
They came later. So
yeah.
It was patrolled by the British, including the Suffolks.
They would have. Because it also, of course, in Nicosia, we had the notorious Murder Mile as well, which was Leader Street.
Now, what is Murder Mile? Leader Street. Is it
Leda.
Now, what?
Well, it was a street. It was just a shopping street in Nicosia. But it seemed it was just where the terrorists found it easy to murder people, and
British or anybody?
Well, anybody, anybody who's, as it were, got in their way. But there were a lot of British, certainly. and you know, their tactics were finding somebody who was doing a bit of shopping to take something home, go into the shop, follow them out, and then just shoot them in the back. And that, you know, that was their. And I think Leader Street eventually must have been put out of bounds, because I mean, we did have quite a few people shot, and there was virtually no way of catching the person who's done it. I mean, once or twice I would think I was on the scene 3 minutes after somebody had been shot, but there wasn't absolutely no chance of I mean, the person who'd done it was miles away. But it was quite a notorious street for that sort of thing to go on.